Welcome in, everybody. It's the CC Podcast. It is the morning of Friday, October 13th. Mike Rutherford's here in Louisville, Kentucky, and we have a first on the podcast. Dan Sinard is being driven to the airport right now. Traveling Dan, that's what we call him. What's the current situation, Dan?
I got my coworker, my buddy here, Jake. He's nice enough driving me here to the Houston airport. Got to board a flight here, head home, get my bearings, and we got a big one tomorrow night. So looking forward to it. But yeah, I've been here since Tuesday. I don't know if Houston's really my vibe, but I will say I did. So we went to like a barbecue place on Tuesday or on Wednesday night. Ran into two Cards fans down here in Houston that both were at the Notre Dame game. They rushed the field. They knew who you were. The guy has a masonry business, so shout out him if he's listening. So that was cool. But, yeah, other than that, I'm ready to get home.
Shout out to our Mason fan. We love you. Yeah. This is a first. You've recorded the podcast in some odd spots over the year. I think we all remember the pre-COVID airport edition. You did it from a Home Depot once. This has to be a little bit awkward. This is the first.
Yeah, I mean, I told my guy Jake here. I was like, hey, listen, we pretty much get to the point. We talk ball. That's what we do. So, anyways, yeah, he's kind enough to escort me around at the moment. But yeah, we'll knock this out, and I'm looking forward to it.
What if you told the most embarrassing Dan of the Dumps yet?
Yeah. I mean, Jake, this guy, he's awesome. He wouldn't care. It's like, but yeah, I actually was thinking of Dan of the Dumps. I got some new material over the weekend, but I still don't know if some of these are suitable for the pod. So, yeah, we'll see.
It's all suitable for the pod. Reminder, before we get into it, podcast brought to you by our friends over at Home Field Apparel. They've got a new line of U of L stuff out right now. They've got more stuff coming this fall. If you want to keep up with all their releases, follow them on their social media channels at Home Field Apparel without an E on Twitter, at Home Field Apparel on Instagram, and of course, check out their website, homefieldapparel.com. And when you do, use the promo code CHRONICLE15 at checkout. It'll save you 15% off your first purchase from Home Field Apparel. Homefieldapparel.com is the website. Check them out. They're the best. All right, Dan, we had the emergency pod on, I mean, it was the early morning of Sunday, reacting to the win over Notre Dame. Are you like me? Like, I'm glad that I'm not playing this weekend. I'm having a hard time turning the page. Like, I'm still buzzing from what happened last weekend.
100%. It's tough. Like, I've been thinking about the game nonstop. I'm sure everyone that was at the game just got incredible, you know, photo ops with them and their family, and I've just been scrolling through those. My son, he's like, I FaceTimed the other night, he's still riding high off of it. But yeah, I mean, for us, it's all right to do it. It's for these kids, they do have to turn the page, because we talked about it, like you said, the wee hours of Sunday morning. Like, I feel like I'm going to be more nervous going into this game. I mean, the Notre Dame game, I was like super excited, super pumped. I am like absolutely terrified of Saturday. Not going to lie, I'm very scared.
I'm getting there as well. Like, the more that comes out, the more that I see the spread kind of dip towards Pitt, it makes me a little bit nervous. We've got Pat Narduzzi getting into it with the Bring Brom Home guy today, which is wonderful. We're going to talk a little bit about that. There are reasons, I think, to be concerned about Pitt. I think there are also reasons to think that this is maybe, you know, might be a closer game, but there's no real reason to think that this is going to be any different than any other inferior opponent we've faced so far this season. But before we totally close the book on the Notre Dame game, do you want to give a shout-out to everybody? I mean, I know you ran into people at the game. I ran into people at the game that were, you know, saying nice things about the podcast. We appreciate everybody. If we didn't get a chance to, like, really – there was one guy who, like, I was walking through the tunnel, and it was, like, a huge crowd of people, and I'm, like, trying to make sure that I stay with my wife and stay with our friends. He's like, Mike. I'm like, what's up? And he's like, great talk. I'm like, I wish we could talk more, but we couldn't make it happen. But it was a very cool experience being back out there at L&N Stadium for the first time in a couple years for me. I know you don't get a chance to go that much being out of town now, but it was just, the day was perfect. It was a magical day.
It was kind of surreal for me just because living in Columbus, you know, it's crazy. I spent my whole life, you know, in Louisville growing up, going to Cards basketball and football games. In the last 4 or 5 years not living there, it's a big change in my life. It's like a kind of a void. I don't really get to attend nearly as many games as I want, obviously, but the pod has kept me really involved, and just running into some of these guys that, like, for whatever reason recognize me. Like, shout out to the one guy I met in the Bush Light line. Bush Light changed the game. But no, like, it was really cool that people you know, they listen to the pod and tune in. And yeah, I mean, we're Cards fans just like everybody else, and I think we're all on the same page, and we're hoping for big things this season.
You almost went full Jonathan Moxon there. Like, Jonathan Moxon.
I did. Yeah, it's like,
man.
I'm only one man. I'm only. I'm in Texas. So, yeah, I keep saying Friday. I have a lot of Varsity Blues vibes going on here.
Dancing Art is just one podcaster. Just one podcaster.
You set me up with that question. What am I supposed to say?
Like, I did. You're right.
I appreciate it. But no, it was cool.
That did remind me, we have a new podcast review. If you want to, of course, subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating, leave us a review. And I mentioned I keep saying I'm going to read the reviews, and I keep forgetting to check. I finally checked. We have two new reviews, and the first one is, it says, because you told me to, 5 stars for not talking about basketball. I don't need that negativity in my life, and advocating to give us some dang towels. Thank you for that. And then another person, Cardinal on Fire, said, hey guys, I found this podcast about a year ago and love listening every week. I also live in Dublin, so it's nice to hear that there's another Card fan up here in Buckeye Country.
What?
Keep up the good work. There you go. We have a fellow Dublin Card fan.
Oh my God. Yeah, buddy. I don't know where you hang out, but yeah, it's like, I guess I just hang out at home. But yeah, come find me, man. We'll grab a beer and we'll talk Cards.
We mentioned this on the Emergency podcast about how quickly the narrative around Louisville was going to flip. And it's definitely, over the last 4 days, has done that. I think you've seen there's been a lot of love for the Cards. I mean, they jump a record number of spots in the AP poll. They go from number 25 to number 14. That's the biggest single week jump in the history of Louisville football. They're number 15 in the coaches poll. I know a lot of the voters individually have us in the top 10. The Reddit poll has us at 13. There's all this talk now about the potential for an undefeated season, the potential for going to the playoff. Jeff Brohm's doing the Jim Rome radio show. People are calling us this year's TCU. It feels like, I mean, it's a lot right now, but this is why you hired Jeff Brohm, Dan.
100%.
100%. There it is. The count is 2.
Gosh, dang it. I got to quit saying that. But you're exactly right. I mean, we said after this game, this was all going to come. And, you know, as fans, it's the best. Like, this is all you want to be involved in. But as a coach, I'm sure, Jeff Brohm, I mean, this is just something that he's like, all right, you know, first time this year that maybe, you know, our players might get a big head, and so we're going to have to see how we respond to this. This is almost obviously the opponent isn't Notre Dame, but from like a mental standpoint, this is probably going to be the toughest game they've had this year. Just to be able to kind of clear that mental hurdle of, okay, now we were hunting earlier, now we're the hunted. We're on everybody's radar. There's not going to be any teams that roll over for us. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, especially how they come out of the gate Saturday. That's what I'm looking for.
One of the crazy things that we talked about last week was, you know, the overwhelming confidence that I think the national media and especially the Notre Dame, the fan media, if you want to call them that, had in Notre Dame's ability to not just win last weekend, but to cover the spread and win fairly handily. And I spent a little bit of the first part of this week listening to some of those same Notre Dame podcasts and reading the websites. And the crazy thing to me is you're not seeing a whole lot of, like, Louisville's for real, they're the real deal. I don't know if it's just people's reluctance to admit that they were wrong, but there's a whole lot of, like, this was all about Notre Dame. We were tired. We just didn't play well. Marcus Freeman doesn't have the goods. Louisville's still not a good team. We just gave them everything that they wanted. And that kind of, it blows my mind a little bit that we're not getting, at least from a certain segment of the population, a lot of credit for what we did last Saturday night.
I think it might be the way that we won the game. I think when you think of Jeff Brohm, you think of high-flying offense, like, you know, trick plays, throwing the ball deep. And really, I mean, we just kind of, on both sides of the ball, we won the battle in the trenches. Jawar was a beast. And I think it's kind of the way we won. It wasn't like, you know, the absolute sexiest thing in the world. I think maybe that's why they're thinking that. They're like, oh, yeah, well, I mean, if their defensive line is beating our offensive line, like, we had to be tired. You know, that's the excuse. But I think they were expecting maybe a different kind of Jeff Brohm offense than what we got on Saturday night. But, you know, credit to Jeff. He stuck with the run, especially in the second half, especially late in the game. And we were able to just kind of, you know, squeeze him out kind of like a boa constrictor. So, yeah, I'm happy that's kind of how we're winning games. I think that's more sustainable. So it'll be interesting to see if we kind of lean on that run game Saturday, especially with this possible pending weather that we have.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're totally right. And I agree with the way that we're winning actually makes me more comfortable moving forward, because there's all this talk now about, and we'll get into it with the Pitt game coming up, but all this talk about the Jeff Brohm letdown, and he won so many top 10 games at Purdue, and then they always found a way to lose to teams that they weren't supposed to lose to. I think the two biggest concerns that most Louisville fans had when Brohm got hired, they were concerned about the defense, which wasn't always great at Purdue, and they were concerned about the run game. You know, he didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher since Ace Wales at Western Kentucky and all that stuff. We've got a fantastic run game this year. We've got a fantastic defense this year. I think you can argue that those are the two strengths. I think it also makes us less susceptible to an upset. You know, if you're beating a top five team by throwing the ball 50 times and winning a game like 49-42, then yeah, I can see you turning around next week and losing to an inferior opponent, because there's less margin for error. We run the ball well. We're stout on defense. I feel like, you know, with the schedule being the way it is, like, there's less of a chance of us dropping a game to Pitt or Virginia or Virginia Tech than maybe I would have thought coming in based on Brohm's track record.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head, but I will follow that up with, there's going to be a game, if not two, that Jack Plummer is going to have to win the game for us. You know, the NC State game, we saw them, they completely took away the run. Luckily, our defense really rose to the occasion that game, and Jack only had to make a couple throws. But there will be a game, and I don't know if it'll be Saturday, I hope not, but there will be a game that, you know, and they're going to try to do the same thing NC State did, take away the run game and say, all right, Jack, like, you know, you got to beat us. But I really like our receiving corps. You know, we got Joey Gatewood involved a little bit last game, so I think that helps. I just really like the balance of where our offense is right now. And I agree with what you said. It's when you're winning those games 49-45, that kind of brings me back to the Petrino era a little bit. And, I mean, those games were awesome. But like you said, there'll be games where, hey, you know, the offense just doesn't click like it's supposed to. And those are the games where you take L's. So let's hope that we keep the same balance that we have moving forward. And, yeah, I mean, Jack being 6-0, that's got to be a big confidence booster for him. I still have faith that when that time comes where he has to win us a game, that he's going to be able to do it.
You said receiving corps again. Are you aware of that?
Oh boy, here we go.
It's okay.
We'll, yeah, I know.
The last thing, we'll take some questions here in a second from folks on Twitter. People keep bringing up, I've seen, like, the big narrative this week outside of just, you know, Louisville path to being 12-0, all that stuff that's out there about the playoff, and, you know, we're dreaming big. People keep bringing up the fact that Brohm won 3 games over top 10 opponents at Purdue, and then lost the very next week every single time, right? I'm assuming you've heard the same thing.
I have. I feel like I specifically remember one of the games. I forgot who they beat, and I want to say they turned it, and this could be wrong. I know they
I know who it was. So,
well, there was a game where they played Ohio State like closely after, and Ohio State was good. And I remember watching the game specifically, and I mean, it wasn't close. I mean, Ohio State absolutely put it on. It was like 35-0 at half or something like that. Now, granted, Ohio State's a different animal, but you know, do I have a cause for concern? I think that's just being a natural fan. Anytime you have a big win, you know, you're concerned going into the next game, especially if it's an inferior opponent, especially one who is ranked from a preseason standpoint, kind of the way Pitt was and what we expected from them. Yeah, I'm definitely concerned because it feels like, hey, what if the light bulb went off for him with this quarterback switch and everything changes this week? So that's why my guard is up right now.
Well, here's the thing about that narrative, though. So at Purdue, Brohm beats Ohio State in that the Tyler Trent game is what they're calling it.
Uh-huh.
And then he turns around, he loses on the road the next week at Michigan State, who ended up being like a 7-6 team. He beats Iowa, who's top 10 team, loses to Wisconsin. He beats Michigan State, loses to Ohio State, like you said.
Yeah.
In every one of those games that they lost, they were an underdog. They played a pretty good team. Like, this is a different animal. Everyone keeps trying to say, well, after every Jeff Brohm big win, they lose the next game. They were supposed to lose those games. It's not like he just spit the bid against a bad Rutgers team or a Northwestern team that they were supposed to beat by 17. They lost games they were supposed to lose. This week, if Louisville lays an egg at Pitt and they lose a game where they're a 7.5-point favorite, yeah, you can bring in the whole they got too high off their own supply, they choked a little bit narrative, like all of that stuff will suffice. But like, I don't buy the whole like Brohm can't keep teams focused after big wins. They just played really good teams and they lost to those really good teams. I think that this is all being a little bit overblown.
I think when you play in these games too, as a team, you're coming off this big win, you're looking for any sort of, like, at least coaches are, they're looking for any sort of edge you can get. And I mean, Pat Narduzzi, I don't think he purposely is saying anything. I mean, yes, is some of our fan base probably being like, oh, man, like he's comparing to Scott Satterfield or whatever. Like, I don't think he was meant to be malicious with that comment by any means. But, hey, I hope the team and the coaching staff is using that as bulletin board material to kind of get the guys going, because these are the type of games you're just looking for anything to kind of get, you know, have the guys get up for it.
You know who did take it personally? Me. I didn't like it. Did not like it one bit. The quote that we're talking about is during his Monday media availability, Pat Narduzzi got asked about, you know, the difference between Jeff Brohm and the 6-0 team compared to some of the other Louisville teams that he had faced when Scott Satterfield was there. And he said, the exact quote was, it's very similar to Satterfield and what they did last year and what they did the year before during the COVID year, which is when I think we played them last. He did only play Satterfield twice. We beat them last year by 2 touchdowns, and they beat us 23-20 in the COVID year at Pitt. I don't care that he wasn't trying to be inflammatory. I don't like this. It reminds me of, you know, I'm going to do the thing where guys talking sports, we have to compare everything to a relationship because we're not smart enough to make a more mature comparison. It reminds me of when you had a really toxic relationship, and like, you know, you were breaking up, making up every 3 months in your 20s. All your friends, like, you know, they were like, you got to get out of this relationship. You got to get out of this relationship. You finally call it quits. You finally break up with Sarah, and you meet somebody else, and like 6 months later, you're the happiest you've ever been. You're living a perfect life. You're smiling, and you're out with your buddies drinking on a guy's night. And one of them is like, you know, she actually kind of reminds me a lot of Sarah. And you want to be like, she's fucking nothing like Sarah. She's the opposite of Sarah. She is an angel. Never, ever, ever let those words come out of your mouth again. That's how I felt when Pat Narduzzi brought up Scott Satterfield and compared him to Jeff Brohm. I know he wasn't trying to make it personal, but he did.
Mike, that story was so good. You got Jake over here laughing his ass off, driving the car. Like, what
it's
a
very
comparison
true.
No, 100%. There's three. I think, first off, he kind of rubs me the wrong way anyways. Like, when we were talking about, like, hiring a coach back in the day, I don't know why. I kind of wanted a defensive-minded coach, and when his name came up, like, to me, I was like, ooh, that might be a sexy hire. But now that I've been in the conference with him, like, he definitely rubs me the wrong way. I don't like the style that their football teams play. So it's definitely a win that I want to get. But I think your comparison, you hit exactly on the head. That I can see why some people are slighted by that comment. And the fact that now he's in, you know, brought Brom Holmes DMs just makes it even sweeter that obviously we're getting to him.
Also, just speaking honestly, we're not very similar to Scott Satterfield's offense. I mean, I guess if you want to say that we're using the run to set up the pass, I mean, we have run the ball more than we've thrown it this year, which is a little bit surprising. But, like, we don't run the zone run offense. We don't do – the passing game is totally different than what it was under Scott Satterfield. We don't have a mobile quarterback like we do with Malik Cunningham. I just don't get the comparison. And if you don't know what we're talking about, the Bring Brom Home guy who famously – spammed everybody for 3 years by just saying Bring Brom Home on everybody's tweets. I guess he's now brought Brom Home. He's been doing some videos where he breaks down the film from the Narduzzi press conference, and it is, I guess, a little bit misleading. He's like, he's showing how Narduzzi was rolling his eyes before the Brom comment. He's doing all this stuff, and apparently he blocked out his name, but it looks like Pat Narduzzi is DMing the Bring Brom Home guy and saying, like, I don't know who you are, but stop misrepresenting myself and our team on Twitter. Take them down, please. Take them down or I'll have you reported. I mean, Pat Narduzzi, Bring Brom Home guys in his fucking head right now. What's going on? Is this the world that we're living in?
Officially rattled on the World Wide Web, Pat Narduzzi. Who would have believed it? If this is actually him, I got to say, like, I'm going to take the cards minus 7.5 or whatever it is, if he's focused on brought Brom Holmes videos. So, yeah, it's I don't know. College football is a crazy world. You never know.
Let's take some questions from Twitter. We'll dive back into the Pitt conversation in a second. I know we're gonna veer into basketball a little bit. I'm sure we had the red white scrimmage on Wednesday night. Nobody got to watch it if you didn't make it out to the KFC Yum Center. But I think we still have enough information to make some comments. So when you have basketball questions, we'll get there. Let's see here. Tyler says right off the bat, win total for Louisville basketball, 12.5. Are you taking the over or the under? I'll take the over. I think we're going to win between 13 and 18 games. That's my bold prediction there.
That sounds about right. I mean, like I said, I've only watched highlights of the game, and, you know, I'm not going to really put a win total on just highlights of a red-white scrimmage, but it does feel like, you know, the games we're supposed to win, I don't think it's going to be like last year. So I think we can actually notch some easy wins on our schedule. So, yeah, I'll say I'll take the over on that.
He also says, and I've seen some variation of this question a lot this week, would you rather go 10-2 and beat Kentucky or 11-1 with your only loss to UK, but you play for the ACC championship?
Oh my gosh. I'd probably take the latter, like the 11-1 and play for the ACC championship.
I feel like you have to. I feel like it's for the betterment of the program, but my God, if we were 11-0 and we lost to Kentucky, I mean, I'd probably kill myself. Like, I don't know how. I don't think I'd be able to handle it. I don't think I could deal with it. Like, it would be the absolute worst thing to happen.
It would. That would be a very dark day.
Somebody asked the question earlier this week. You know, would you rather go 9-3, like kind of a disappointing stretch to end the season, or go 11-1, but your only loss is to Kentucky? And I said 11-1, but I really had to think about it. It was just like I really don't want that situation to happen, but playing for a conference championship would be cool.
That's what I'm saying. I think that trumps everything. Like, I guess I would get over the loss as soon as we ran out on the field for the conference championship. I'd be like, all right, this is pretty cool.
I mean, we did the thing for comparison. It's not a apples to apples comparison, but remember in 98 when UK won the national title, but they lost to like the worst U of L team in our lifetime up until recently. and we all did
the
thing
Cameron
where it's,
Murray year.
Yeah, we all did the thing where it's like, cool, you're the national champions and you're the second best team in the state. And I don't think it really – it probably bugged them a little bit, but not as much as it bugged us seeing them win the national title. So I'll choose the playing Florida State in the conference championship. By the way, did you know we have to talk about this for a second. So, you know, there's a realistic chance that there's a possibility that us, Carolina, and Florida State, who are the only undefeated teams left in the ACC, could all finish 8-0 in conference because we don't play each other. So if that happens, the tiebreaker is the winning percentage of the teams you played in ACC play, their winning percentage in ACC games. I know this is kind of hard to follow. But there is a possibility that all of those winning percentages for all three teams could be equal. Do you have any idea what the second tiebreaker is?
I feel like I read this, and now that you're speaking about it, I can't remember, but it was something pretty hectic.
They will draw names out of a fucking hat.
Oh, my God. I mean, obviously, if that happens, we're fucked. Like, there's no doubt in my mind we're not getting drawn out of the hat.
Could you imagine the broadcast, though? Like, everybody watching from home, like, they make it like a big ESPN special. It's like, the first name out of the hat. The North Carolina Tar Heels. And, like, I'm just, like, crying. I'm like, I have to turn it off.
What a disaster that would be.
Mike Norvell, you are out of the ACC championship. Just make them, let them fight. I don't know. let them have a big fight.
They just televise it. What a disaster.
Cardinal Red says, we all know that the economy is teetering right now and could collapse in any second. So my question is, how many yards do you think Jawar Jordan gets on Saturday against Pitt?
Man, everything in me wants to say that he's going to get anywhere between 90 and 110. It's hard to have back-to-back games, especially coming off a game where, you know, now you're getting, like, national love, so they're all going to be geared up for him. I know Pitt's a little bit down, but their defensive line kind of reminds me of NC State's. Like, they usually got some studs there. It's going to be raining, and they're going to stack the box. So I'm going to say under.
I'm going to say, yeah, I think that he's probably going to get it. I'll say, like, 75 yards. I think it's going to be – Pitt's going to try to do just what NC State did. Like, they're going to sell out to stop the run. There is going to be rain. Heinz Field is a grass surface, which is annoying. I think that they're going to really just seven guys every time, stop the run, try to blitz Plummer. I assume you're walking into the airport now.
I am. This is
Jesus Christ. This is the lengths we go to get you guys D-minus quality podcasting. But yeah, I'll go. I think Jawar has a little bit of a. I'm not going to say step back. I think it's going to be they're going to put all the pressure on Jack Plummer. Spooky, scary skeletons, Dr. Colby says. Help me get there on basketball, please. I mean, I don't think you're asking the question the wrong podcast.
Can I tell you basketball right now? The vibes are so good for football, and I truly mean this. Like, as a fan base, we should just be like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just carry over these vibes to basketball and see what happens. Like, they showed flashes the other night, like Trey White. I mean, could be a really nice player. Sky Clark could be a really nice player. Dennis Evans can develop into something really nice. Like, let's just say, fuck it. Go in with no expectations and just give Kenny and all the guys our support.
Look at you. All right.
I know.
He's turned a new leaf. If we lose to Pitt this weekend, you're like, fucking basketball. I can't even get excited about it.
The vibes for the fan base are just so good right now, and it's like the first time I feel like we've had this just good feeling between everyone. I'm like, all right, we got everyone on the same page. This is what we've been waiting for like 4 or 5 years. Let's just fucking all be like, hey, you know what? Let's just take these good vibes, bottle them up, get behind the basketball team, and just see what happens.
I mean, I'm kind of doing that to begin with. I'm hoping for the best. There's no.
I don't like your attitude right now.
I mean, what do you want me to say? I'm definitely hoping for the best. I just don't think it's going to be the best. I don't.
Okay.
I think we'll be. I mean, I've already guaranteed we're going to be better than last year. I think we'll be fine. I think we'll be we'll finish like 9th, 10th in the ACC, which is a step above where people had us preseason. I just don't think we're ever going to flirt with being an NCAA tournament team, which is what I would like to see in year two of any head coach.
Part of me is with you, but part of me is like, I'm not even going to think about that. I'm going to think about game one and see how we look.
You're focused on UMBC.
I am.
Alan says, at this point, is it fair to say that winning less than 10 games would be a disappointment for football? It's a fair question now. I mean, you've got going to be favored, according to the FPI, the ESPN's little rating index. We're going to be favored in 5 of our last 6 games. At Miami is the only game that we are an underdog, and we're a slight underdog in that game. Virginia Tech and Pitt are not good. Kentucky, we'll see how they look by the end of the year. Duke, Riley Leonard's still banged up. I'm not going to say it'd be a disappointment to go 9-3 because I think it's unfair to rewrite your preseason expectations. But at this point, I'm trying to find a way to say I wouldn't be disappointed 9-3, but I think I kind of would be at this point.
This is what I'll say. I think I would be disappointed, but in the same breath, it's going to be like extremely not easy. It's maybe even difficult to get to 10 wins. Does that make sense? I just think right now you're, like I said earlier, you're the hunted. Everyone knows about you now. So you're going to get everyone's best shot. I mean, I would say out of all the games, like Virginia is the one game. I'm not even going to say Virginia Tech because I feel like they're kind of sneaky. But Virginia is the one game where I'm like, all right, I think I can probably breathe a little bit easy here, and not get too stressed. But, I mean, Pitt, Virginia Tech, Miami, Kentucky, I mean – I can see all 5 of those being battles when it comes down to it.
Michael says, was that the first time that you stormed the field? If not, which time has been the best and why? If so, what was the best part? And do we really think that Brohm is here to stay if he continues to have such success? That was the first time I stormed the field. It was the best. It was awesome. Still glowing. Dan, have you stormed a field before? I think that was your first time, too.
That was my first time. I wasn't at the Florida State game when we stormed the field. I wasn't at the – when did we storm the field last year? Why am I – the Wake Forest game, I wasn't there. So, yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I guess I know why people want to storm the field now because I was like, this is incredible.
Well, you were there in 06 for Miami and West Virginia, weren't you?
I was there for Miami. Did we storm the field? I know I didn't, but I wasn't there for the West Virginia game.
It was a more mild storm, the Miami.
Okay, game. Yeah, I don't think I did. I was, think I was mature.
That was the game. Well, you weren't. That was the game that you called me beforehand. You were very drunk, and you're like,
I was.
They're stomping on the fucking bird, and you act like you were gonna run out there on the field and fight Miami fans.
I was on the team at that point when they like, stomped on the bird. There. I literally was like, all right, well, I'm going to be on the kickoff, so this is personal to me. I was very upset.
You legitimately said, I'll call you back. I've got to get down there. As if it implying that you were going out on the field, which I was like, what is happening right now?
Well, what made it worse was, like, if you go back and watch the video of them stomping on the field, I'll never forget, like, it was like a backup quarterback was like waving a white towel while he was doing it. And I was like, God, we're going to beat the shit out of these guys today.
You also wanted to be that quarterback. You wanted to be waving that flag.
The look I just got here in the airport when I just said that was, that was something. I was like, are we going to beat the shit? Oh God.
Wilson says, does Louisville basketball finish the exhibition games at 2-0? All right, so Louisville will play Simmons College next Wednesday, and I'm seeing a lot of people after the red-white scrimmage because, look, you can paint a red-white scrimmage any way you want to. You know, I don't believe any of the takes that are overwhelmingly positive or overwhelmingly negative because it's the team playing each other. You know, if they shoot 25% for the field, the defense was great. If they shoot 75% for the field, the offense was great. It's easy to paint it that way. So I'm seeing a lot of people who are like, we'll find out more about this team next week when they play Simmons College. And my response to that is, no, we won't. Because I don't know if anybody – they came in here 5 years ago to play Chris Mack's first team. We won by 50. We could have won by 95. It was the worst team that I've ever seen in an exhibition game. So I went and I looked at their scores last season. They won 2 games last season playing, I think, what is it? It's like NAIA or D3. They're a very low level. they lost. Some of the scores were breathtaking. I mean, we know people, you and I know people that played at Thomas More College, right? They weren't great high school players. Thomas More beat Simmons last year 105-27.
Oh my God. Oh boy.
Schools that I didn't know existed, like it's like Nazareth Bible College from Nashville beat them like 120-62. Like the scores were insane. So I don't think that Simmons College is going to give us a really good idea of what this team is going to look like, unless it's somehow close in like the second half, in which case I think we all panic. But the Wesleyan game on October 30th, I think, is when we, the first time we can kind of get a little bit of a better sense of what we have here.
I thought I saw Peyton Siva tweet something out that I thought was dead accurate. It's hard to really take a whole lot away, because I saw people complaining like, oh, look at all the turnovers already for like the red-white scrimmage. Hey, these are the guys that like they go up against every single day in practice. They know every single set, you know, because they brought them 1,000 times. There's never going to be any flow to those games at all. They know everyone's best moves, everyone's post moves, you know, when they like to drive, shot fake, all of it. So, of course, that game's going to look sloppy. So, you know, I'm not going to really draw anything from that. Like you said, I mean, with Simmons College being as bad as they are, I can't really draw too much from that. The only thing I'm really taking away is when I watch these individual highlights, just like actual basketball moves people are making. Like, there was a couple moves Trey White made, like going to the hoop the other day. I was like, okay, that's like exactly what I'm looking for in a player. Like, someone that's able to kind of create his own shot, someone that can get to the basket. So that's kind of what I'm looking for, is more individually, you know, how are these guys handling, you know, getting the ball on the perimeter or in the post, and kind of seeing, you know, what they're doing with it.
No, I totally agree. Yeah, people were, I think, were overreacting to the turnovers in the first half, and then the seemingly more smooth second half. I think the only thing you can take away from red white scrimmage is individual stuff. All the takes that I've seen, like the people who wanted to come in, you know, I think a lot of people who were like, "We've got ourselves a team here," are the same people who last year after the red white scrimmage were like, "I think we're going to the Sweet 16." Like, you know, the positive people were going to be positive about that. The negative people were going to be negative. I do think that there were, like you said, I think Trey White's the real deal. I'm excited about him. I'm also excited. I didn't realize this until after the game. Trey White and Sky Clark have been like best friends since ninth grade. So they have a pre-existing relationship. I had no idea until they started talking in the post-game press conference. They've stepped up and become leaders. I think that will help things this year, because we never really had a vocal player leader at any point last season. Dennis is going to be Anthony Davis, freshman season 2.0. I think that's established. Dennis is going to win National Player of the Year. I'm in love with Dennis. There's no question about it.
We all are.
Everybody is, deservedly so. So I think that individually there were some good things to take away based off of everything that I heard there. But overall, you know, you can only take so much away from a red-white scrimmage. Bozak Smith won those games, said, "I once wrestled a giraffe to the ground. What great feats of strength have you accomplished?" Nothing like that.
Well, I'll tell you, I sent you a pic last night. Old Dan was fishing out in the Gulf of Mexico yesterday, and it must be red season, because old Dan reeled in about a 26-pound red fish. I'm not gonna lie. All right, so I'm gonna lay out the scenario here. We weren't having a lot of luck, and the captain, you could tell he was getting a little frustrated that we hadn't caught one yet, and then my rod just starts going crazy, and this guy put
somebody
so much
please,
pressure on.
Please save that clip.
Oh,
my rod just starts.
Yeah. Go ahead and cut that one. but no, the captain, if I wouldn't have reeled in this fish and like he would have got off the hook, like I think this guy would have just left me for dead out in the ocean. I didn't catch the fish for me. I caught it for this guy. He's like, "No, you gotta move. Come on, nope, no one left." Like, it was the most scared I've ever been. I'm like, I thought we were having fun out here. Not only that, it was like the hardest thing. Like, I was like fighting this thing for 8 minutes, and I was like, what if I just gave up right now? Like, I'm dying out here. Like, I think everyone was 20 times more excited for this than me. I was like, how did I get stuck catching the fish? So anyways, I was excited when I finally caught it, but man, what a workout.
Catching a big redfish, though, I feel like that's good for the vibes. I feel like
100%. Yeah, but good for the vibes. Solid. Although I thought we were going to be able to eat it, but I don't know. guess we can't.
He didn't eat it?
No, no. The captain said no. So, sorry, Cap.
It sounds like whatever he says goes.
Cap, that's a fart face.
Holly says, do you regret saying that Sam Hartman is the best looking player in college football when it's clearly Jack Plummer? That's more of a question for you.
Yeah, I mean, I was building up Sam pretty good. I was really trying to get in his head a little bit, and I think I did. So, yeah, I'm going to say, you know, Jack, he's just a rugged, tough guy that cares about football, doesn't worry about looks, and he's focused on his craft, unlike Sam, who obviously goes to the tanning bed and gets his beard worked on every single day. So I'm going to stick with that take.
Sam's focused on being the bachelor in 3 years, and yeah, that's fine. Some people want to win football games. Some people want to, you know, be
his pregame meetings with Jordan Rodgers was no football talk. It was all talk of, all right, what do I got to do to get on the Bachelor?
How pissed do you think Sam Hartman is about like this guy hates Louisville talk? Like, you know, it's got to bother him. He gets no more shot. Like, you've played 7 years of college football, you're done. You're known forever as a guy that just got fucking ham boned every time you came to L&N Stadium.
Yeah, that's tough. I don't know. I don't know how you recover from that. I mean, really, I don't think he's going to be coming to Derby anytime soon.
If he does, bet against whoever his horse is. That's all I'll say. Josh says, it feels so weird that basketball started and we don't even care to talk about it as a fan base. What would make this year a success record-wise? And the classic question of what would have to occur for Josh Hurd to consider making a change after 2 years. I mean, I think that people still care. People are always going to care about Louisville basketball. If we won four games every year for like 5 years, people are still going to care going into season six. It's just, it's who we are. It's in our DNA. I think people are just a little bit pessimistic. Some people are. Some people aren't. Some people are taking the Dan Snyder approach. I mean, I think record-wise, if you win, it's such a tough question. We've gotten like a million times this offseason. Because it's more nuanced than that. You know, I think if we flirted with the NCAA tournament but didn't make it, that's a successful season. If we make the NCAA tournament, obviously it's a successful season. But if it's just a whatever 500 type year, then I'm sorry, I'm not going to lower my bar that far just because we were so bad last year.
Can I give Kenny some advice?
Yeah, of course.
This is advice we tried to give Scott Satterfield. Let's get off to a good start. You know, don't. That no flubs the beginning of the season, and then if we do play some of these good opponents or whatnot, like, God, maybe luck's on our side and one of them is like more down than we thought and we ended up sneaking a win out, and we just got to get the fan base involved a little bit. I think with one kind of unexpected win that we can really kind of be like, all right, like, we just got to get everyone back coming to the Yum Center. We got to get everyone on board here. But really, I think it's you know, the fan base is just waiting for that kind of one moment to be like, all right, like, maybe we got something here. And I think like an early unexpected win would do that.
I think even if we're just competitive in those games in New York, it would remind me of, remember Chris Mack's first year where.
Yeah, the Marquette game.
Well, we played right with Tennessee the game before that. We were very close against Tennessee, and then we should have beaten Marquette the game. And even though we lost both those games, I think the fan base was like, all right, we've got more here than I think we thought we were going to. And then we come home and we beat Michigan State, which was the first big win of the Mac era. I mean, the non-conference schedule is the weakest we've had statistically in like 22 years. We're playing a lot of really bad teams. We should be able to stack some wins. The only three real chances he'll have to make a splashy win before conference play are going to be those two games in New York and then the Kentucky game. Unless you want to say at DePaul is a splashy win, which I'm not taking shots at DePaul fans. Don't come at me. But you know, DePaul's not supposed to be very good this year. But it's a non-conference schedule that sets itself up to, like, hopefully we have a gaudy record or a record that looks good going into conference play. But if you lose some of those games, I think people are even more upset than they were a year ago when we started at 0-9.
No doubt. And I just to piggyback off what you said. I don't know. I'm still trying to gauge the fan base of how they're going to define this season. Like, whether it's success or failure. Is it wins, losses? Is it style of play? Is it, you know, desperation of players? So I think everyone's kind of got a different tab on what success looks like for the program. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how we're judging this team after, you know, four or five games.
Cole says, I sat around a bunch of Notre Dame fans last weekend, and they were all cool, besides the college kids doing coke. Okay. They couldn't believe that I cheered for a plumber throwaway. Besides the bathroom shenanigans, what was your funniest interaction with a fan or fans? First of all, I did not see anybody doing coke. That's a shame. Second of all, I did the exact same thing. There was one play where, like, I was that annoying fan who was doing the whole, like, actually, this is good type deal. Like, it was a third down play where everyone's all hyped up, and Plummer gets pressure immediately, and he throws the ball out of the back of the end zone. And, like, every fan around me is, like, groaning. They're like, oh. And I'm doing the thing where, like, that's okay. That's okay. That's good, Jack. That's good. Like, I was so happy to see him just, like, throw the ball away and make the right decision. I was definitely that fan. I mean, I feel like I had, like, a million funny interactions with fans over the course of those, like, 7 hours that we were tailgating and at the game. It was a magic night. It was everywhere we went. Like, just somebody was doing some funny. The bathroom guy holding court. By the way, shout out to that guy. His name is Dylan. I found out on Twitter. You're the man.
Yeah, shout out Dylan. Cam had a he had like one of those like funnel cakes that had all the powdered sugar on them. After Jawar's first touchdown, he literally like threw it in the air and. Like, speaking of coke, it looked like he had just, like, gone to Pablo Escobar's house and, like, he was just covered in powdered sugar and got all over the Notre Dame fan's, like, jacket who was right next to us. Thank God. The guy, I'll admit, he was awesome. Like, couldn't have been nicer to my son. He was a good sport about it. But, yeah, I'd say that was quite the interaction we had.
I saw that video. It was lovely. It was wonderful. I assumed that guy was like somebody you all knew because Cam was just drilling him.
It was just a guy, and he was he made the game watching experience extremely kind of good natured. So nothing to me, at least, nothing negative to say about the Notre Dame fan base.
It reminds me of I went to the UVL UK basketball game, the Edgar Sosa shot game. And I sat next to the nicest, like, 95-year-old lady in a UK sweater. And it kind of ruined the game for me, to be honest. Like, because, like, you know, Sosa hits the shot, and I'm like, oh, I want to be like, fuck you. And I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, yay. And she's like, I'm just so happy for you. I was like, God damn it, lady, you're ruining this for me.
Those games are better when, like, you don't – it's not even intentional, but – just with your cheers, and you can hear the cheers either like the row up or the row behind.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, all right, nope, we're doing this to each other right now. And then like by like the third one, it's like you're directly looking them in the eyes, like clapping in their face. You're like, all right, like we're back.
It's that episode of South Park where Stan's fighting all the other dads at Little League games, and he goes there, and the guy claps back at him. He's like, I guess that's my guy. That's how you feel every time.
Oh, God.
Patrick says, who are the midseason MVPs on offense and defense? I feel like offense is obvious.
Yeah, I mean, Jawar, but at the same time, I feel like the offensive line isn't getting the love that it should. And, I mean, Thrashman got off to a hell of a start. I know he scored last week, but it'll be nice to kind of see if we can get him going again. On defense, I mean, there's a couple – our linebackers have just been unbelievable so far, but I'm still going to give it to Ashton just because how much havoc that he wreaks.
Offense, I'm going to go with Jawar. I mean, yeah, if you wanted to do the thing where it's like the entire offensive line, it feels kind of like a lazy deal, but I would also buy it because the offensive line's been tremendous so far. But I'll stick with Jawar. Defense, I'm torn between, like, Ashton Gelade is second in the country in QB pressures. I saw that he got – somebody gave him like a Heisman vote this week on CBS, and we're talking about how this is going to be his last year here. He's his pro potential's off the charts, which I do agree with. I think he's probably going to be in the NFL after this season. I'm torn between him, and I don't think we talk enough about Quincy Riley. Like,
yeah,
his numbers over the last 2 years are up there with any cornerback in the country. Like, you just PSA for every team playing Louisville, don't throw at Quincy Riley. When Hartman did it on the first drive, I was like, what the fuck are you doing? And I think him making that pick where he was in perfect position really just kind of set the tone for Notre Dame, who I think thought that they were going to be able to throw deep on us, not being able to do that outside of the one hit to Faison and then the one that the Tyreek had dropped. Like, Quincy Riley is just – like, he is a shutdown corner. I think I lean slightly towards Gelade, but Riley would be right there. I think if Riley had more opportunities, I think people just they don't want to throw at him. So they go at Jarvis Brownlee or the safeties, who are also really good. So yeah. I'm going with Ashton, but Quincy Riley, and you're right. Like, Alderman's been so good. T.J. Quinn's been so good at linebacker. But Ashton's the pick, I think.
So, not to ignore what Quincy Riley's done, he's been awesome. I thought it was interesting this week, our boy Narduzzi, when talking about the cards, he said, and I misquoted this, sorry, but I'm pretty sure he said, I think the strength is their defensive line. And I was like, God, imagine us saying that going into the season. Like, the job that Mark Ivy has done up front, with like guys like Mason Reiger and Ramon Puryear,
yeah,
Ash. I mean, it's just been as much as we could expect, you know, and more from the defensive line, because that was a position group I was very nervous about going into the year.
Well, it's the one position group that we didn't have to go out and help in the transfer portal. It's all guys that we had last year that have just gotten a lot better. Like Ashton was really good last season. He's definitely taken a step forward. Destel is kind of in a different role, and he's been tremendous this year. And then Puryear and Reiger, former walk-ons, are just beasting dudes. Like, I mean, I don't know if you saw the highlight when on Reiger's strip sack. Like, he just destroys Joe Alt, who's a guy who had not given up a sack in 2 years in a game. He's a top five potential top five draft pick, and Reiger, who came here as a walk-on, just fucking beast modes him. Again, suck on that, Rudy. That's what you're supposed to do as a walk-on here. That's what we do with our walk-ons. But, like, those guys have just – it's not like we went out and just got a ton of help from the transfer portal. It's just dudes that have gotten a whole lot better under our tutelage. And you're right. I could not be happier that Mark Ivy stuck around and chose not to follow Sat to Cincinnati. Last question here, because we got to get going. Gage says, do you think one of the most underrated aspects of this season so far – is establishing a culture that knows how to win close games? I feel like Louisville hasn't had that in a long time. 100%, to use Dan's phrase, 100%. Like,
there we go. That's four.
I think it's almost the biggest thing that we've had going for us this year is, you know, Scott Satterfield's up at Cincinnati now, and they're doing the same thing that they did here, where they're dominating games statistically and just not finding ways to win. We've had three games where it's been like just somebody make a play, and we've made plays. And if we don't have that happen, we lose to Georgia Tech, we lose to Indiana, we lose to NC State. I mean, you can make the case that we would lose to Notre Dame. We definitely have established a culture with a team that I think they think they're going to win every game they play regardless of what the score is at any given time.
I think the reason that us feeling that way is more attainable is because there's really not a weak spot on our team. Like, offense, balance. Defense has been great so far for the most part. We've had a couple lapses, but we haven't talked. I mean, Brock Travelstead's been amazing. I know he missed the field goal in the first half, but like, he was huge for us in the second half. He hits a 53-yarder against NC State. He, you know, kicked well in game one against Georgia Tech. I think on special teams, for the most part, I know we gave up the onside kick at the end of the game. I think we gave up a decent kick return at one point, but for the most part, I feel like our return teams, our kickoff teams, our punt teams have been fairly sound. So just having balance in all three phases of the game, I think that's why I'm like, all right, close game, there's not really a weak point here that I think they can go after.
No, it's a good point. And Travelstead has been rock solid. He missed the one, but like you said, he still ends up being 4 or 5. You're going to take that. The one thing that has, like, we're 0-for-3 on onside kick recovers. We've got to recover an onside kick at some point. We're not doing well there. All right, if we didn't get to your question, apologies. We got to get to pit talk here. Well, before we do you have a Dan in the dumps for this week that you want to tell? Or are you uncomfortable in the airport telling?
No,
stories?
I mean, this is one. So I was tailgating with our buddy Rob Henners and their family and my family this Saturday. And, you know, I grew up with Rob, and he was like, oh, man, like, if you ever need some material, I have, like, a ton from, like, way back in the day. But there was one that he brought up that, like, even my parents were, like, rolling their eyes at this one. Like, so, I mean, who mails stuff anymore? I never mail anything. Like, I really don't. So I don't know if I had to, like, send out a thank you card. I don't even know what it was, a package. But I hadn't mailed something in years. This was like back in like 2009 or something. Anyways, I got these return address stickers, and I'll be honest, I thought they were stamps. So I mailed out what I needed to mail, and I put like my return address, like where the stamp is supposed to go. And then like all of a sudden, like, you know, 3 days later, it like shows up in my mailbox. I was like, oh, what the hell? Like they, something's wrong here. So I like turned around and did it again. I did it three times, and finally I like had the courage to like go to my wife. I'm like, why won't they send this out? She was like, Danny, oh my God. Like, tell me you know how to mail something. And anyways, so we were telling that story at the tailgate on Saturday, and like my dad was like, yeah, we tried to hide a lot of this stuff from everyone. I was like, yeah. I was like, sorry. So anyways, yeah, that's something I'm not proud of. I'm still not mailing out a lot of stuff nowadays, but it is what it is.
I believe you also went through a phase where you put the stamp on the wrong side. And
I think that might have been a plan. I might have butchered the story. That, I think I threw a stamp on there somewhere where it wasn't supposed to go. I don't know, but yeah.
I just remember your wife's quote. She was then your girlfriend, but her quote was, Danny, this is not a normal mistake.
I get that more than once a week. So, yeah, sorry about that.
Let's talk about the Pitt game. The cards go up. It does make me a little bit nervous. Last week we were talking about the spread has been kind of holding steady. It was going towards Louisville. It started 6.5, then went down to 5.5. This week it's been kind of the opposite. Louisville opened as a 9.5-point favorite. They're now just a 7.5-point favorite against Pitt. That makes me – whenever I see stuff like that, it makes me nervous. I think 91% of the money I saw on Thursday had been bet on the Panthers. Does that make you nervous?
100% it makes me nervous. I've had the heebie-jeebies about this game from the time the clock hit zero against Notre Dame. I have a very uneasy feeling about it.
Louisville also will be facing a different quarterback, Phil Dracovich. They initially said they were going to move him to tight end. They're now not going to move him to tight end, but he's not starting anymore. The new quarterback for Pitt. First of all, I want to ask, I know how to pronounce his last name now.
Oh, yeah.
But I did not know.
I saw this online, and so I was like, I hope he doesn't ask me this on the pod because I'm not going to be able to do it.
So Penn State transfer, his first name's Christian. His last name is spelled V-E-I-L-L-E-U-X. How would you pronounce that name?
V-E-L-L. Is it like Velia?
That's what I said. I was like, it's French. I was like, Veya is what I would go with. It's pronounced Veyer.
Veyer. Ooh.
Christian Veyer.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't sound like someone who's going to throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns.
His numbers are not good so far. He did not numbers in minimal snaps at Penn State. He has not put up good numbers with limited snaps here at Pitt. The offense for Pitt has been bad. You know, they're typically a team that runs the ball very well. They averaged 190 yards on the ground last season. They're averaging about 112 yards on the ground so far this season. I think if there's a reason for concern outside of the letdown and all this stuff, the weather is going to be bad. It's a grass field. Pitt's going to play this defensive style that's a lot like NC State and a little bit of Notre Dame, where they're going to try to shut down the run. They're going to pressure Plummer every throw, and they're going to say, if you can beat us deep, go for it. Now, the difference in this game and the last two games is they don't have the cornerbacks that Notre Dame and NC State does. Their safeties are about the same as those two teams. Like, we should be able to hit on some big plays again. I'm not saying that it's going to be like the Boston College game, but as long as Jack Plummer can throw a semi-wet ball, I feel good about our receivers against their corners and our receivers against their safeties. We should be able to get something going. But like, there's definitely a very real part of me that feels like we may be in for another type, like NC State type game, low scoring, kind of clunky, maybe comes down to turnovers. Like I'm legitimately nervous for this one, for sure.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head with turnovers. That's what I'm looking at in the game. Like, just be solid throughout the whole game. Don't try to do too much. We have the better team. As long as there's no silly penalties, no turnovers. I mean, I'm talking like a coach here, but I feel like even if it's a grinded out game, we should be okay. But God, I just get pictures in my head of this game, like, you know, a dark pit, rainy sky with like that long grass at Heinz Field where we want to use our speed. And it seems like we're stuck in the mud, you know, trying to break away. So I don't know. I know we got game predictions coming up. I just, this one's scary to me.
I knew that they'd been a thorn in our side. I was a little surprised when I went back and was looking at stuff for the game. They've beaten us 8 out of the last 10 times we've played. Like, that's pretty dominant. We have not won up there since 2012. Now, granted, we've had a limited number of opportunities, but still, it's been since the middle part of the Charlie Strong era that we've beaten them at Heinz Field, or whatever it's called now. Like, they've had our number for a long time. Now, we did beat them by 2 touchdowns last year. They're off to a terrible start this year. They don't have a whole lot of momentum going into this game. I'm with you in saying we're clearly the better team. We should take care of business, but there's definitely a real part of me that thinks that this could be just a ugly slugfest. And we, you know, for whatever reason, just don't play. Even when we've won up there, we've not played well over the years. It's taken a lot to pull off a victory. But I know it feels like we're getting greedy at this point, but I know we've got the bye week coming up next week. I just want to cruise for the rest of the month with an undefeated record. Like, I don't think I could take a loss at this point. I'll be devastated if we don't win this game. That's the point that I've gotten to.
Can you imagine if we come out and won like 41-0? Like, the vibes we would have going into bye week. Oh my God, I'd be like then that's when, like, I'm already, you know, I'm a one game at a guy type of guy, or one game at a time type of guy, but. Like, it's impossible not to just kind of daydream and think about, hey, geez, look at this schedule here. But with that being said, you got a bye coming up next week. Just go in, do whatever is necessary, take care of business. Then you got 2 weeks off to kind of regroup, for the rest of the season.
This is also our debut on the CW with the new contract that the ACC has. So we go from ABC primetime last week to, I guess, following up an episode of Charmed this week on the CW.
I was going to say Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but that's
sandwiched in between Buffy and Charmed. It's going to be great. Yeah. 6:30 is the kickoff. Odd start time. Let's do it. Let's get to some predictions. How does this one go? What's your confidence level right now?
Dude, I mean, this is tough. Like, I have an awful feeling about this. Like, everything in me is like, you know, as the sportscaster in me, as a betting guy, I might even take Pitt money line, to be honest. That's how scared I am of this
Jesus.
Game. But, and that's more of a life bet. But with that being said, I trust the fact that I think Jeff Brohm can run circles around Pat Narduzzi from a coaching standpoint, and I'm going to leave it at that. So I'll say Cards win. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think we win 20-17.
I think it's going to be ugly. I think it's going to be low scoring. I think we'll hit on a few big plays, and that'll be the difference. The defense has to step up big time again. I mean, whatever they did before Notre Dame, we need them to do again this week. I think the Cards get it done. I think they win, and I think they end up covering. I'll say Louisville 27, Pitt 17. I would take that. I'll be happy with that.
Okay, yeah. And, I mean, like I said, it's not like I'm – I think we're a less of team as Pitt, obviously. This is just a very, like, from a gambling standpoint,
sure,
this is an awful spot for the Cards. Like,
I
huge letdown.
I'm not ready for the fun to end, damn it. I don't want this to stop. This has been so much fun. Like, seeing all the people that are doing all their crazy fan stuff where, like, they won't take down their UofL decorations for the Halloween decorations now because, you know, we're 6-0. I love this shit. And I want this to continue. I'm not ready for it to be over. Let's get this done tomorrow. Go Cards. Beat Pitt. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. It's the best way to keep up with when new episodes are out. We will talk to you guys next week, hopefully, with a 7-0 record. Go Cards. Beat Pitt.
Go Cards, baby.